Welcome to Food for Thought. My name is Colleen Patrick-Goudreau from Compassionate Cooks. I founded Compassionate Cooks to empower people to make informed food choices and to debunk myths about vegetarianism and animal rights. I do this through cooking classes, an online cookbook, lectures and workshops, articles and essays, this podcast, and a cooking DVD. I also have a cookbook called The Joy of Vegan Baking, which you can learn more about at joyofveganbaking.com. I also encourage you to join our message board, which you can find through our website, www.compassionatecooks.com. It's a wonderful way to connect with other listeners, cooking class students, and other people who are using Compassionate Cooks as a resource. Before we get started on our topic today, let me just send out a huge thank you to today's sponsor, Jill Forrest. Thank you, Jill. Jill wrote me a lovely email, which said the following. I turned vegetarian at the age of 25. I'm now 33, due mainly to living with a vegetarian and partly due to moving to a cottage where we yearly watched lambs running around in the fields, leaping in happiness one day and disappearing the next. I felt liberated by my decision to stop eating meat. It was only upon listening to your podcast, being new to podcasts, these were my first introduction, came a realization that I was not doing enough. I did not understand the violation of dairy cows. Like the meat eaters I tried to engage in a dialogue with, I never gave it much thought. It is to your credit that my decision to adopt a vegan lifestyle was made within 5 minutes of listening to the first podcast of yours that I heard, Life After Cheese. I wish to thank you for the change you have inspired in my life. I have two children, one of 2 years and one 6 months. Since making the change to veganism, I have felt healthier, produced better quality milk for my nursing son, and have more energy and vitality as I feel more empowered to face the world as a vegan. I live in northern Norway, a huge meat-eating community surrounding me and looks of madness whenever the issue arises. I have a local health food store who is wonderful in their support, but due to my limited food options here, I have learned to cook all over again. I am enjoying the new life I feel I have gained and know that I will become more active as a spokesperson for those with no voice. Changing the world can happen one person at a time, and I believe that I sow the seeds every time someone asks me why I am living this way. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. Thank you, Jill, from the bottom of my heart. It's absolutely a pleasure to do this work, and I'm honored and humbled to receive such beautiful letters, and I'm very grateful for your support. It means so much to me that so many of you take the time to write to me. Please forgive me if I don't respond right away, but I do treasure every single email that I receive. Your support, Jill, and all the other sponsors out there and other potential sponsors make it possible for me to continue to do this podcast, and I appreciate every bit of support you're able to provide. You can be part of this work by visiting CompassionateCooks.com and clicking on Support Our Podcast. Thank you, Jill, very much, and thank you to all of the listeners and all of the podcast sponsors. Now, I don't know about you, but I lament the fact that so many people look for easy solutions to their health problems and think that the answer lies in a pill or in surgery, and put more faith in the industries who have the most to gain from convincing people to trust this way of thinking. What I think we tend to forget, however, is that the supplement industry is also just that. It's an industry. And we might want to look at how people are also trying to find an easy solution for wellness through a pill. Maybe not in the form of pharmaceuticals, but in the form of vitamin and mineral supplements. Now, supplements may be essential when there is a true deficiency or a true need, but they can be unnecessary or even detrimental when we use them as a substitute for a healthy diet. So today I want to talk about the nutrients we need and why it's best to get most of them from food and not from supplements. I will talk specifically about antioxidant supplements, which have become quite popular, namely beta carotene, vitamin A, vitamin E, vitamin C, selenium, and zinc, as well as speak to whether or not we need to supplement such things as iron, folic acid, calcium, vitamin D, and DHA. And I'll talk also about the best multivitamin to take, assuming, of course, that it's necessary to take a multivitamin. And I would argue that it is, and I'll discuss that a little later on. It's important for me to repeat here what I've said before when I talk about nutrition. I am neither a nutritionist nor a doctor, and I am not giving medical advice. Rather, I am reporting to you what I have learned and read from others who are much more versed in this field. I highly respect the work of Dr. McDougall, Dr. Furman, Dr. Campbell, and nutritionists and dietitians such as Brenda Davis, Jack Norris, and others. That's just to name a few. And it's from their mouths or from their literature that I am gathering this information. But you don't even need doctors to tell you this. How many times have I recommended that we get our nutrients from food? How many times? How many times have I told you that? So I'm here to repeat that again. We have no business trying to extract out a single beneficial element from plants. It just doesn't work that way. All the factors that make up a plant, the healthfulness of a plant, the phytochemicals, the fiber, the vitamins within that plant, all work together to create the benefit that we receive in our own bodies. The nutrients found in plants come perfectly packaged. So we just can't pull out one element and hope that it's going to be some miracle cure. As Dr. McDougall says, and I'm quoting him, he says, when a single concentrated nutrient is ingested in isolation, chemical imbalances are created within the cells. The end result is an increased risk of disease and earlier death. So, unquote. So, as I've said before, let's get our nutrients from where we were meant to get them from the plants themselves. Now, there are some cases when supplements can be really beneficial, but first let's talk about when supplements are dangerous. Let's talk about antioxidant supplements. Apparently, 10 to 20% of the adult population of North America and Europe, that's 80 to 160 million people, consume antioxidant supplements. That's a lot of people. And recently, a group of researchers thoroughly examined the effect of antioxidant supplements in terms of mortality. The results were published in a recent issue of the Journal of the American Medical Association, in which the authors reported, quote, "We did not find convincing evidence that antioxidant supplements have beneficial effects on mortality. Even more, beta-carotene, vitamin A, and vitamin E seem to increase the risk of death. Further randomized trials are needed to establish the effects of vitamin C and selenium." End quote. And there have been many studies. This is probably the most thorough in terms of this kind of study. It was a very detailed analysis. It's called a meta-analysis. A meta-analysis is a way of studying data, and it looks at the results of a number of different studies and trials to get a comprehensive picture. So in this meta-analysis, a total of 226,606 people in 68 trials were examined, looking at beta-carotene, vitamin A, and vitamin E singly or in combinations. They found that people who take these antioxidant supplements don't live any longer than those who don't take them. In fact, those who take the supplements, particularly vitamin A, have an increased risk of death. The research also shows no benefit, but also no harm, for vitamin C supplements. Selenium supplements tended to very slightly reduce risk of death. It's really important, though, to hear when I say this, the research emphasized, and I am emphasizing, that their findings should not be translated to the potential effects of fruits and vegetables. They're talking about synthetic supplements, not getting these nutrients, the selenium, the vitamin C, the E, the A, from fruits and vegetables and grains, etc. They're talking about supplements. Now, I don't know if this is reason to freak out, but I would say moving forward, I think that it's probably something to consider. Most multivitamins contain vitamin E and vitamin A and or beta carotene. And personally, I don't take these particular multivitamins. If you have a multivitamin that you're taking right now that does contain these isolated antioxidants, I would just take a look and see if that multivitamin contains more than the recommended daily allowance, the RDA. For instance, the RDA for vitamin E is 5,000 IUs, and your multi probably contains probably that many. So should you throw out your existing multivitamin because it contains these isolated nutrients? I don't know if that's necessary, and you'll have to make that decision yourself. But I do think that if you're currently taking supplements in addition to the multi, specifically vitamin A, beta carotene, and vitamin E, and you're not under the care of a physician for these supplements, then perhaps I would recommend that you reconsider. If you're in treatment for a specific deficiency and you're under the care of a doctor, then please defer to your doctor's advice. But if you're taking additional supplements because you read it was a good thing to do, then I think it's it's worth reconsidering. And then moving forward in terms of your multivitamin, just taking a multivitamin that does not contain vitamin E and vitamin A and beta carotene. And I'll talk about particular multivitamins when we move on. So again, like, do get lots of beta carotene and other carotenoids. Beta carotene is just one type of carotenoid. There are over 500 different carotenoids. So get these from your diet. Food sources of beta carotene include, you know this, the bright orange vegetables like sweet potatoes and carrots, winter squash, the green, wonderful green leafies that I talk about all the time, the kale, spinach, turnip greens, collard greens, cilantro, which I guess you could take cilantro if you want to. I'm not a big fan of cilantro, but you can take it. Also, fresh thyme has beta carotene. Mangoes have beta carotene. Again, those really wonderful orange fruits and vegetables. So eat these vegetables and get these essential nutrients in the way they were meant to be consumed. Now, if you're taking vitamin C separate from your multivitamin and you're not doing it for a specific medical reason, then again, you have to decide. But it doesn't look like there's anything harmful about taking vitamin C, but I'm also not sure there's really any benefit, and you might be better able to put your money to better use, because it's probably just a waste of money more than anything else. And get your vitamin C from food. The RDA, the recommended daily allowance, is a mere 90 milligrams for adult males and 75 for adult women. So we're talking like a pretty minuscule amount in terms of the requirement for vitamin C, but obviously people eating a plant-based diet take in huge amounts of this vitamin, well over the RDA, and that's no problem when it comes from food. So, you know, again, what are the best sources of vitamin C? And you know this already. So most people just think of oranges. Well, there are plenty other fruits and vegetables that have lots of vitamin C that kind of shame oranges. So consider other vegetables and fruits. Broccoli has a huge amount of vitamin C, bell peppers, kale, cauliflower, strawberries, lemons, obviously other citrus fruits as well have vitamin C, mustard and turnip greens, Brussels sprouts, papaya, chard, cabbage, spinach, kiwi, snow peas, cantaloupe, oranges, grapefruit, again, limes, the citrus fruits, tomatoes, zucchini, raspberries, asparagus, celery, pineapples, lettuce, watermelon, fennel, peppermint, and parsley. So again, just to give you a perspective, just half a cup of chopped raw bell pepper contains about 140 milligrams of vitamin C. Okay, a cup of whole strawberries, 82 milligrams of vitamin C. One medium orange is only 70 milligrams. So you can just see the difference there between the bell pepper at 140 for a half a cup, or one medium orange, which is 70 milligrams. A half a cup of cooked broccoli is 58. So you get the idea. It's pretty easy to get lots of good vitamin C from food. And by the way, the idea that vitamin C will prevent common colds hasn't really been proven, but there is some evidence that it does reduce the duration and the severity of the symptoms of cold. So there might be some benefit in taking a little extra C when you feel a cold coming on. But again, try to get it from your food. Vitamin E, moving on to vitamin E supplements, there's no evidence that they're good, and there is a hint that they may be harmful. Not vitamin E from food, vitamin E supplements, okay? The RDA for vitamin E is just 15 milligrams. And in the case of many plant-based vitamins, the problem tends to be that the majority of people aren't getting enough of the vitamins. The issue isn't often that they're getting too much. So it might sound like we're constantly walking this line to making sure that we get enough. But now we're starting to see that we may be getting too much, and that could be a problem. But again, it's especially if we're supplementing like crazy. Getting an abundance of these nutrients from food is not the problem. It's from supplements. Okay, I'm just going to keep repeating that because I want to make sure that's really clear, because I know people are going to listen to the podcast and they're going to walk away and be like, oh my God, it's really bad that we have too much vitamin A. And I'm not talking about vitamin A. I'm not talking about vitamins in the food, because I remember when these studies were first coming out, I remember there were some reports, oh, fruits and vegetables can be actually dangerous in high quantities. And I was like, are you kidding? This is not about fruits and vegetables. It's about supplements. And for a while, professionals were recommending taking vitamin E supplements because of its efficacy in reducing heart disease and cancer. But whereas vitamin E from foods does this, nearly all the clinical trials on vitamin E from the past few years have yielded negative, inconclusive, or neutral results. So get vitamin E from food. There's no reason to take vitamin E supplements. And the best food sources of vitamin E include mustard greens, turnip greens, collard greens, kale, chard, and spinach. Again, do you see the benefit of these green leafy vegetables? They are so incredible. They are just packed with so many nutrients. Almonds and sunflower seeds are also fantastic. Other great sources of vitamin E include olives and avocado, wheat germ, Brussels sprouts, again, asparagus, and other nuts and seeds as well. And again, just to give you some perspective, if the RDA for vitamin E is 15 milligrams for adults, consider the fact that 1 ounce of raw almonds has almost 7 milligrams, okay? One medium avocado has about 2.5. One medium sweet potato has almost 6. So just from these foods alone, and I know you're eating more than that, you will not have a problem getting your vitamin E from foods, okay? Plants. They have all the nutrients that we need. Now, I mentioned selenium in the above survey, the meta-analysis that they did, and so I'll talk about it briefly. I really don't have much to say other than there doesn't seem to be a reason to take this supplement either, this antioxidant, as a supplement. But if it's in your multi, it's fine. There's nothing to be concerned about. Now, zinc. Like with vitamin C, people tend to take zinc because they've heard that zinc is good for shortening or curing colds, but there's no convincing evidence of this either. The bottom line is that you do not need to take zinc supplements, but most multivitamins contain zinc, and again, as with selenium, it's fine. It's fine. There's not a toxicity issue with the amount that's in most multivitamins. It's usually about 20 milligrams. The RDA is 11 milligrams a day for men, 8 for women. For children, it varies. And obviously, pregnant and lactating women would want more, about 13 to 14 milligrams respectively. So it's usually about 20 in the multivitamin, and that's fine. Now, where are the food sources of zinc? Well, it's not greens this time. It's cashews, chickpeas, and vegetarian baked beans, pecans, all come in about 1.5 milligrams for small amounts. So again, you'll have no problem finding zinc in your food if you're eating a varied diet full of wonderful plant foods. Now, what about folate? We hear a lot about folate. We hear a lot about this particular nutrient. Particularly pregnant women hear a lot about this. So what's folate? Folate is a water-soluble B vitamin that occurs naturally in food. Folic acid is the synthetic form of folate, and that's found in supplements, and it's added to fortified foods, okay? Folate occurs naturally in foods. Folic acid is the synthetic supplement. So whenever you hear folic acid, you're not even talking about the folate from foods anymore. You're talking only about the synthetic supplement. So some would say that we need folate, but we don't necessarily need folic acid. In fact, Dr. McDougall feels very strongly about this based on research that he cites regarding the risk of too much folic acid. Remember, that's only the supplement that I'm talking about, the synthetic supplement. And he says that folic acid sold in capsules is a medication at best and a toxin at worst. He points out that evidence suggests that consuming more than 0.2 milligrams of folic acid daily floods the bloodstream with this vitamin, overloading the metabolic capacities of the body, causing imbalances that increase the risk of heart disease and cancer. So, of course, he suggests to get folate from food, not folic acid from pills, okay? Now, in my favorite multivitamin, and I'll talk more about this a little later on, there are just 0.2 milligrams, or that's 200 micrograms, in my multivitamin. So over and above that would not be recommended, again, according to Dr. McDougall and other experts out there. So let's just take a look at our friend's etymology again. The word folate comes from the Latin word folium, which means leaf, right? Other words that come from that root include foliage, right? Referring to leaves, leaves turning color in the fall. We tend to use that word. Folio, as in Shakespeare's first folio. And that referred to the way the pages or leaves were folded to create the book. Or exfoliate, we've heard that, which means to cast off, to shed, as in skin, in the form of leaves or scales. Okay, so it's a little bit of etymology there for you. So back to folate. So the RDA for folate for adult men and women is 400 micrograms or 0.4 milligrams. And can you see what I was saying before? I was saying that in the multivitamin, and what Dr. McDougall is saying is that 0.2 milligrams is what they're finding is enough. 0.2 milligrams of the folic acid. What the RDA for folate is 0.4 milligrams. Okay, so you can see the difference. Now, pregnant women should make sure they're also getting folate, but if you're eating an abundance of vegetables that contain folate, then you really shouldn't have to take folic acid. Again, consult with your doctor and maybe just check out yourself how much folate you're actually getting from the fruits and vegetables. And if you feel that you need to get a little bit more, this is pregnant and lactating women, then you can do so, but then just, you know, stop after you're finished lactating. But again, if you're just getting an abundance of vegetables, you really shouldn't need this folic acid. Another concern that Dr. McDougall has about folic acid, based on the evidence that high amounts of it are harmful, is that it's being used to fortify a number of foods, such as breads and cereals and pastas and rice. So, for instance, a breakfast cereal fortified with 100% of the RDA, which is 0.4 milligrams or 400 micrograms, on top of someone taking a multi, is already a lot. Not all breakfast cereals are supplemented with that much. Some are only 100 micrograms, which would be 0.1 milligram, which is better, but it's just something to be aware of. And that's one of his concerns, is that it's showing up in all these fortified foods. I've heard some vegan advocates just say, well, why don't we just fortify all our food? Then people won't have to worry about nutrients. They won't have to worry about taking their multivitamin. And you can see one of the reasons this could be a problem. We don't want to just fortify all of our foods with these synthetic supplements that may actually be causing harm when we take them in high amounts. Now, leafy green vegetables, again, spinach, turnip greens, asparagus, broccoli, and green peas are all fantastic sources of folate. So again, let's do the math. If 400 micrograms or 0.4 milligrams is what we want to shoot for, black-eyed peas have 105 micrograms. Okay, that's a lot. That's really fantastic. Just a half a cup of boiled spinach is 100 micrograms. That's just a half a cup. A cup of raw is 60. A half a cup of great northern beans, those wonderful little white beans, 90 micrograms. Four asparagus spears, 85 micrograms. The list goes on, but you can see again that it's not hard to consume folate or any of these nutrients that I'm talking about when eating a plant-based diet full of wonderful whole foods. And again, that's why I really advocate eating as many whole foods as possible. I do want to talk a little more about iron, even though I have an entire episode on it. Remember, we talked about the fact that vegetarians get about 50% more vitamin C than non-vegetarians, and for vegans, it's even higher. And now you can see from the numbers I just gave you regarding the amount of vitamin C in various plant foods why this is the case. Vitamin C is very important for a number of reasons, including in the absorption of iron. You might also remember that I talked about all the iron-rich foods such as mushrooms and broccoli and beans and lentils and pumpkin seeds, and the benefit of eating vitamin C rich foods with iron rich foods means that the absorption is going to be even greater. Now, you might also remember that one of the things I said was that yes, people can be deficient in iron, which is often remedied by supplementing with a small amount of vitamin C or vitamin C rich foods, but people can also get too much iron, and that can be a problem. That's why you often see multivitamins without iron, and that's the one I take. Okay, so again, getting high amounts of these supplements can also be a bad thing, be a dangerous thing, and we don't necessarily want to do that. So that's just some information on the problems researchers are seeing with antioxidant supplements and the potential for people to get too much iron and folic acid through supplements. Now, does all this mean that supplements are never necessary? In my personal opinion, based on the research that I've done, my answer is no. I still believe, for instance, that a multivitamin is good insurance, but I'm convinced that it has to be the right multivitamin, not just any multivitamin. And that's why I recommend Dr. Furman's multivitamin. It's called Gentle Care. And you can purchase Dr. Furman's multivitamin through Compassionate Cooks. And I'm really excited about this new partnership. This multivitamin is formulated specifically with all of these considerations in mind, everything that I just named for you, everything we just talked about. It's vegan. Obviously, I wouldn't be recommending it if it weren't. It does not contain vitamin A, does not contain isolated beta carotene, it does not contain iron, it does not contain vitamin E, and it contains that 0.2 milligrams of folate, well, in the form of folic acid, obviously. And I like Dr. Furman's reasoning for recommending the right multivitamin. It's along the lines of what I always say, even though he's doing his damnedest and I'm doing my damnedest to get people to eat the right way. He contends that most of our diets are not ideal and that individual absorption varies from person to person. Because he does include vitamin D, although everyone agrees that the sun is the best source, that's also insurance for those months when many people around the globe don't even see the sun, or for those who don't work outside. So let's talk a little bit about that. What about supplementing with vitamin D? Are there other nutrients we should be supplementing our diets with? So let's talk about calcium and vitamin D at the same time. Now, I'm not going to spend too much time here on calcium because I already have, again, an entire episode just on calcium. But I want to stress that, like with many of the nutrients I'm talking about, it's not just about taking in the nutrients, right? It's also about increasing the absorption of these nutrients and not losing these nutrients. Now, iron is a good example of this. There's an abundance of iron in plant foods, but if we want to increase our absorption of iron, then we want to eat vitamin C-rich foods at the same time. In the calcium episode, I talk about excess animal protein leaching the calcium from our bones. And now I'd like to talk a little bit more about the important role vitamin D plays in increasing the calcium absorption. I think I mentioned this at the very end of that calcium episode, if I remember correctly, but I want to talk about vitamin D at greater length. As Jack Norris over at Vegan Outreach says, calcium is important for bones because it's a major component of bones, which are constantly being broken down and built back up. Vitamin D regulates calcium absorption and excretion, especially when calcium intake is low. He goes on, most Americans seem to be getting enough calcium, whereas vitamin D is a bigger concern. A 2003 report from the Nurses Health Study showed vitamin D to be more important than calcium intake for preventing hip fractures in postmenopausal women. In 2007, a meta-analysis of prospective studies and randomized controlled trials found that calcium intake and calcium supplements were not associated with a lower risk for hip fractures, in addition to people being more likely to be deficient in vitamin D than they are in calcium. Vitamin D also appears to be more important for bones in conjunction with lower calcium intakes. And this can be a factor if people aren't eating a whole foods vegan diet or not getting calcium fortified milk, such as soy and almonds. So again, it's really important to eat a whole foods plant-based diet, or obviously there are these calcium fortified milks, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. So these days, many of us are inside most of the time. We go outside only to get in our cars and drive to our office buildings and then back into our cars and drive home again when it's dark outside. When we purposefully go into the sun, we wear sunscreen, which does seem to block the absorption of vitamin D. Simon really wants to be part of this episode. I am continually telling him that he cannot be part of this episode right now. So that's the little jumping sound that you hear. So when we purposefully go into the sun, we wear sunscreen, which does seem to block the absorption of vitamin D. And the sun is the best source of vitamin D. So having said all that, that's one of the reasons I think it makes sense to supplement vitamin D. And you don't have to do anything beyond taking Dr. Furman's multivitamin, for instance, the one that I recommend. It's already in there, which is fantastic. And it's in there in a really high quantity, and it's in there in a really high quality. And what do I mean by that? Well, aside from the vitamin D produced in our bodies when exposed to about 15 minutes of sun per day, getting it on our face and hands, about 15 minutes a day. The vitamin D in supplements come from one of two places. There's vitamin D3, which is derived from animals, usually from sheep's wool or fish oil, and so not vegan, obviously. And there's vitamin D2, which is usually obtained from yeast and is thus vegan. So it's worth noting, and again, Dr. Furman went out of his way to produce a 100% vegan multivitamin that contains the right amount of the things that are appropriate to supplement and without the things that would be inappropriate to supplement with or even dangerous to supplement with. And that's why I'm recommending, as well as selling his products. I sound like an infomercial. I don't mean to sound like an infomercial. I'm being really sincere about his products. I just feel really strongly about them. Now, vitamin D is not only good for bone health, again, according to recent research and our friend Jack Norris, registered dietitian, he's over there at Vegan Outreach, he makes it his mission to make sure vegans are getting the right nutrition information, and I really appreciate the work he's doing. He writes, suboptimal vitamin D levels have been linked with fibromyalgia, rheumatoid arthritis, multiple sclerosis, upper respiratory tract infections, premenstrual syndrome, polycystic ovary disease, psoriasis, muscle weakness, lower back pain, diabetes, high blood pressure, and cancer. Now, bone pain is another symptom that sometimes clears up upon vitamin D supplementation. One study reported that the only side effect of vitamin D supplements was improved mood, indicating that perhaps vitamin D is linked to depression. This makes sense, given that many people often become depressed when they are deprived of sunshine for long periods of time, right? So vitamin D may be the component that people are missing in the winter, the dark winter months, and that could be why they get depressed. So vitamin D, good. But you're asking, do you need to supplement with calcium? Well, again, go back to the calcium episode and check out the amounts of calcium that I give in that episode, both the RDA and the amount of calcium in various foods. The RDA for adults is about 1,000 milligrams in the US, but remember, in the UK, the RDA is lower. It's about 700, 750 milligrams. So here's just an example of some foods with high amounts of calcium. Again, if what we want to shoot for is about 1,000 milligrams, let's see. Half a cup of cooked collard greens is about 180 milligrams, and a half a cup of cooked collard greens is not a lot. Hopefully you're eating more than that in a sitting. Half a cup of cooked kale has 90 milligrams. Green leafy vegetables also contain vitamin K, by the way, which is also really good for bone health. So let's see, one cup of navy beans, again, another kind of white bean, has about 130 milligrams. Two tablespoons of sesame seeds, about 180 milligrams. Whole foods here, folks. That's what I'm talking about. And if you're drinking fortified non-dairy milks, that's fine too. You'll notice that about a cup of, you know, a fortified soy milk or a fortified almond milk is usually about 200 to 300 milligrams. And it's a good idea to shake these milks, as the calcium may settle to the bottom. So before you drink them or use them in your cereal, etc., just give them a little shake. So you're getting calcium in your diet, and you're also doing well by getting the animal protein out and the vitamin D in. So that would be optimum. Now, even though 1,000 milligrams seems high, a good amount and easy to get, though the 750 milligrams is plenty high, the 750 milligrams. But there is evidence to suggest that if you're over 50, you might want to increase that number a bit. You want to maybe get about 1,200 milligrams if you're over 50. And if you don't feel like you're getting enough calcium from plants and fortified foods, then go ahead and take an additional calcium supplement. But please consider the other things I suggested. Get your vitamin D, eat lots of green leafy vegetables for the vitamin K and for all the other wonderful components, and do weight-bearing exercises as well. When you do weight-bearing exercises, you're giving your bones a reason to live. They are not useful if you're not using your bones. If you're not actually doing any kind of resistance, then they have no purpose. So, you know, you can even just get some cans of vegetables and fruits, and if you don't have weights, you could always use those, and just do some, you know, maybe two or three sets of 15 reps a day, and get those bones moving. And so one of the vitamins that Dr. Furman does have that I have in my store now is a calcium supplement. So you can also go there for that. So you can go to just one place for all of these things. Now, I know I've covered vitamin B12 and omega-3 fatty acids before, but I just want to say a little bit more about them now. Not much more to say about vitamin B12 other than take it with a multi or take a separate B12 supplement. We need only about 2 micrograms a day, which is a very small amount. But since there are no real reliable plant-based sources of vitamin B12, we just don't eat soil like we used to, it's best to supplement our diets with this. And this goes for non-vegetarians as well as vegetarians and vegans. B12 deficiency occurs in both vegans and non-vegans. Okay, so take your B12 supplement or just in a multivitamin. And again, in Dr. Furman's multivitamin, there is B12. Now, you've heard me recommend flax seeds for omega-3 consumption, and I still stand by that. Flax seeds are the most concentrated source of omega-3 fatty acids. Grind them and eat a tablespoon a day. Keep them in your refrigerator or freezer. Okay, so I still stand by that. That is something we should still be doing. But it's worth saying a little bit more because people still don't really understand the difference between the buzzwords. They hear omega-3s, EFAs, essential fatty acids, EPA, ALA, LA, DHA. So I thought I would shed a little bit of light on them. So in short, two primary essential fatty acids, as EFAs that you've heard, that little acronym, EFAs, are linoleic acid, which is an omega-6 fat, and alpha-linolenic acid, which is an omega-3 fat. So linoleic, LA, which is an omega-6, and alpha-linolenic acid, ALA, which is an omega-3 fat. Okay, so sorry if that's confusing. The words obviously sound very similar. Now, when something is called essential, it means that our body cannot manufacture it. So it's required in our diet. Essential nutrients, essential fats. These are things that we need to make sure we get from our food. And both of these are polyunsaturated fats. So without getting into the chemistry of it all, optimal health depends on the proper balance of these fatty acids. That's why you've heard me say that people are getting too many omega-6 fatty acids and not enough omega-3 fatty acids. People are getting too many of the omega-6 fatty acids, the linoleic, the LA fatty acids, because this polyunsaturated fat is found in vegetable oils such as corn, sunflower, safflower, the so-called vegetable oil, which is just a combination of these polyunsaturated oils. And people eat lots of this kind of oil, these kinds of oils, because they cook with them. But not only that, it's because these kinds of oils are in a lot of the processed packaged foods that people are buying. Another component of this omega-6 or linoleic LA acid is arachidonic acid, which is found in meat, dairy, and egg. So people are getting it that way too. So they're getting way too many omega-6 fatty acids, but are they getting enough omega-3s? Well, one component of the omega-3 fatty acid called alpha-linolenic acid, which is ALA, a short-chain fatty acid, is found mainly in the oil of flax seeds, hemp seeds, walnuts, rapeseed, which is made from which is what canola oil is made from, chia seeds, and soybeans. So this is why it's recommended that people consume these things to increase their omega-3 intake. Now, two other components of these omega-3 fatty acids is EPA and DHA. These are long-chain omega-3 fatty acids, and both EPA and DHA are found mostly in fatty fish and seaweeds. And remember, the fish consume this fat from the seaweed because they eat the seaweed. They don't just have it in their body. So it's the seaweed that is the main source of this DHA and this EPA. So ultimately, what we want to do is increase our conversion of omega-3 fatty acids to these longer chain fatty acids, to the EPA and the DHA. And this is very possible to do by lowering the amount of omega-6 fatty acids and increasing the consumption of those omega-3s through the flax seeds, etc. Again, 1 tablespoon of ground flaxseed, 1 teaspoon of flax oil, 4 tablespoons of walnuts a day, about 12 walnut halves a day. Those are all great options to consume daily to do this, to get this conversion from the omega-3 fatty acids to the longer chain EPA and DHA. Now, some people do not convert omega-3 fatty acids into DHA sufficiently, and they may be more prone to depression, allergies, inflammatory skin disease such as eczema, and also people with diabetes don't efficiently convert the omega-3s into the EPA and DHA. Okay, they don't convert them very well. Other factors that inhibit the conversion are excessive saturated fat, cholesterol, and trans fats in the diet, and the rate of conversion is limited in infants, and it also declines as people get older, much older. So the big question is, do vegans need to supplement with a direct source of DHA? Okay, with, you know, going directly to DHA as opposed to taking the omega-3s and having our bodies convert those omega-3s through the flax seeds, for instance, into DHA. Do we need to go directly to DHA? As far as the research goes thus far, and I've looked at a number of experts' opinions on this, if you are a premature infant and if you are an infant and not breastfeeding, a direct DHA supplement would be necessary. If you're consuming a high amount of omega-6 fatty acids and thus impeding the conversion to DHA, then you would be better off lowering these omega-6 fatty acids and increasing the omega-3s through the flax seeds, etc. You know, so that would be the better option. You can certainly take the DHA DHA supplement, but I would just rather see you lower the omega-6s and increase the omega-3s. If you have diabetes or are over 65, it would be prudent to take DHA directly. If you're pregnant or lactating, you might consider supplementing directly, since infants have a little more difficulty converting the omega-3s. Once they get a little older, they should do fine without the direct DHA and just eating the flax seeds. There's evidence that low levels of DHA are associated with several neurological and behavioral disorders, such as depression, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD, schizophrenia, Alzheimer's disease. So if you suffer from any of these, or you know anyone who does, or have a child who has ADHD, etc., perhaps you might consider supplementing with some DHA directly. It looks like you'd want to take it for a few months to increase the stores. That would probably be the best thing to do, as opposed to just taking it right away and expecting results. It takes a little time to, you know, get into your body, get into your blood. Now, if you don't fall into any of these categories, and that's most people, it looks like the conversion happens with no problem. Having said that, just because I like insurance, about once a year, I usually get a DHA supplement. And again, I get it from Dr. Furman. And I just take it directly for a couple months until that bottle runs out. And otherwise, I just continue taking my flax seeds every day, my tablespoon of flax seeds, ground flax seeds every day, and I put it in my smoothie, etc. So that's what I do. So it looks like we're fine just taking the flax seeds. You don't necessarily have to go directly to the DHA. Okay, so does that make sense? I hope it all makes sense. I really, really simplified this because it's a very complicated chemistry process that takes place with all of these conversions. So I wanted to make it as clear as possible, and I really hope I did. Now, I've said before, I really respect the work of Dr. Furman and the products he sells. He has a fantastic DHA supplement that's derived from microalgae, and this is what I would recommend for those of you who are supplementing with DHA directly. Those of us who have older parents, it also wouldn't be a bad thing to get some of this DHA supplement. I know my mom keeps telling me that, about the fish oil that her doctors recommend. And since she's older and she's not taking the ground flaxseed, I recommend, because she doesn't listen to me. Plus her conversion rate might be poor anyway. She's, you know, in her early 70s. I got her some of this DHA and I told her that she's taking this from now on indefinitely. And what really helped was, you know, DHA seems to play a role in memory. And so it was something that she got really excited about when I told her that. So now she's taking her DHA every day. And one thing I really appreciate about Dr. Furman is the time he takes to make sure that he's getting like really high quality stuff. He talks a lot about the rancidity of fish oil. One of the problems with fish oil is that it gets really rancid. And he also talks about, you know, when people are taking omega-3s from capsules and fish oil, obviously from capsules, that the capsules can mask the smell of a rancid oil. So his DHA supplement called DHA Purity is kept refrigerated at all times. It's packaged in dark bottles to ensure freshness. And then when you order it and get it, you just put it right in the refrigerator. And the bottle he sells comes with a dropper that indicates exactly how much you need. And there's even a dose for children. And I'm thrilled that I'm now selling his products. And I don't want to sound like I'm pushing this at all. I just get a lot of questions from people about what I recommend. And I'm really excited to be able to sell his stuff. I was really excited because it occurred to me that I wanted to sell his products and share them with you. And so I wrote to Dr. Furman and said, you know, have you considered selling your stuff wholesale? And he wrote back right away. And he was like, yes, we've been doing that. And we have an affiliate program as well. So I thought it was a brilliant suggestion, but he was way ahead of me. And so now I'm selling his multivitamin, his DHA Purity. There's also the calcium and some other things, including some sun care products and lots of other things. And you can find it by going to the website, by going to compassionatecooks.com. And you can find it in a number of ways. Under resources, it says recommended supplements. Under shop, I think it says buy supplements. So you can just check it out yourself and you can read more about his products when you go to his website and see if you like, you know, see if you like it. And if you do, then buy them through my website. You know, it's obviously nice because I get a small commission for it, which so helps me do this work. And obviously we're supporting something that is very high quality and really valuable. So I hope this was valuable. I hope this information was helpful. I think it's so important that we have the right information so that we can all be as healthy as we can be and empower others to do the same. The animals need us to be healthy so we can be the best representatives possible for a compassionate and healthful lifestyle that honors animals as beautiful living beings, not as butchered bodies and milk and egg machines. May you find health and abundance in this satisfying and gratifying lifestyle for the animals, both human and non-human. This is Colleen from Compassionate Cooks. Thanks for listening.